Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this evening is the, besides being Saturday night, it's also the full moon observance night tonight. And it's an opportunity to meditate, practice. Of course, we've been on retreat now for, well, since this is getting toward the end of January, so it's going on a month of retreat time. This last little while, I've been doing a lot of readings on the hindrances, of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness / worry, skeptical doubt. These are objects of the mind that we take an interest in, give importance to, end up being overwhelmed by. And sometimes it feels, of course, that it's that we're attacked by the hindrances. I mean, it's in sort of meditative parlance, in the sort of meditation circles of parlance, sort of multiple hindrance attacks that happened. But these are mental states that we find ourselves having, they hold our attention, and they tend to block out the opportunities for a more skillful qualities of mind to come to the fore. So, and we feel that we're kind of subjected to these, or we're attracted to them, or pulled into their sphere of influence. And it's important to be able to not be hooked by their compelling nature, and to not to be trapped in the story of the things that we're either infatuated by or averse to, or want to spin a story out around, but to be able to take them as an object of attention or an object of investigation, and that's a, when we're able to, because it doesn't mean that we don't ever experience these various hindrances, but it's being able to take it as a, one of the ways of dealing with it is to really take it as an object of investigation, to look at it closely and see the drawback or the complicating aspect of it. When the qualities of just some kind of infatuation and seeking of stimulation comes up, and it's just that seeking out something that is kind of interesting, fascinating, anything to get out of being mindful and peaceful. Looking at it a bit more objectively. See, in this, I mean, there's a discourse where the Buddha is just sitting with the Sangha and there's sort of this it's night time and lights or candles there, and bugs start coming to attract it to the flame. And Mr. Buddha, as is his wont, to be able to use that as a simile or as an image, saying, "Yeah, this is how most beings are sort of oblivious to the danger or the difficulty, tend to be attracted to what is an object of the senses and are pulled in and don't recognize until it's too late that there's a drawback there, there's a danger there." And so that being pulled into the objects of the senses, and whether it's through liking or disliking or wanting or not wanting, we're pulled in, and then it's an obstruction. So that in our meditation, to be willing to investigate the different habits of mind, the tendencies of mind, and recognize when we're being pulled into something that is actually obstructive, it's a hindrance. The mind is not being able to be stable, steady, clear, bright. So that lifting up of the mind to an object of meditation, an object of reflection that allows it to establish itself in those qualities of clarity and stability. That when we use the meditation object of whatever meditation object it is, but say generally the breath, not to end up complacently letting the object of meditation lull us into either dullness or to restlessness and drifting. But to sharpen and clarify the meditation object so that there's a continuity of awareness and mindfulness and an energy that is being exerted or lifting up of the mind to the meditation object. So that we're establishing the mind firmly in what we're doing. And of course this is a moment to moment exercise. It's a moment to moment training. In reflecting on these hindrances, it's also It's important to recognize that the whole path of a practice of laying a strong foundation in skillful qualities is a necessary basis for the meditation. The meditation can't be separated from our day-to-day activities or our basic attitudes towards ourselves or to the world around us. So that sense of paying attention to the ways that we interact, the actions of both bodily and speech, as well as our attitudes. There's a discourse where Anuruddha, who was considered a very accomplished meditator, practitioner, and reflecting on the qualities that were essential for accomplishment in practice, and he had this insight in what it took, and he went to the Buddha to relate that came to certain attitudes and ways of thinking, or of some of them are not just thinking but kind of attitudes in that they but it does the actual thoughts and conceptions within the mind, conceptions, perceptions, he related to the Buddha that what he felt was necessary or essential. There's that thoughts of modesty, humility, as opposed to those of kind of boastfulness or self-serving attitudes of mind. Thoughts of contentment rather than thoughts of discontent that lead to discontent. Thoughts of seclusion. They are aiming at seclusion rather than entanglement and association with a lot of activity. Having attitudes and thoughts of application of effort, putting forth energy rather than the same thoughts of laziness or finding excuses to not apply effort. Thoughts of mindfulness, awareness, and just reminding oneself to be mindful, because that's the word that is used for mindfulness, translated as mindfulness, is also, it's kind of like reminding oneself, recollecting, remembering to be present. That sense of that recollection, reminding, being mindful rather than drifting with just kind of scattered thoughts. centering and focusing the mind. Yeah. Those thoughts of stability and samadhi, the mind being well established. Rather than it being dispersed. And then thoughts of discernment. Wisdom. Seeing clearly. Rather than of confusion or doubt. That when the Buddha, when Anuruddha went to the Buddha and explained that to him, then the Buddha said, approved of that, but then he also said to add one more, say, habit of mind or tendency of mind, a way of thinking, that say non-proliferation, that one who would be accomplished. Somebody who is dedicated to non-proliferation, or Najin Jeff translates it as non-objectification. And that's a really essential quality, because that those tendencies to proliferate and to pick up something and run with it, and there's a certain element of that objectification, in the sense of making those objects of the mind really objects of attention, compelling, creating a story around them. In that way of objectification, that creating a story and running with that story, proliferating with that story. And whether the story is about oneself, of one's all one's problems, or all one's specialness, or the proliferations of the actual world in terms of its compelling nature, or its loathsomeness. It is recognizing these are stories that one is proliferating around. One's creating a story, and we end up entangled in those stories. We end up, and particularly when we reflect on the nature of the hindrances, that which kind of overwhelms awareness and weakens discernment. If we actually told stories to ourselves that strengthened awareness and propped up our discernment and wisdom, that'd be a different thing. And of course, that's where recollections of and they are meditations that the Buddha encourages, and just recollections of the Buddha, recollections of the teachings, recollections of those who have practiced before, recollections of virtue, recollections of generosity. Recollections of peace. These would be, they'd be, those would be stories that would support our practice. But particularly when we're thinking of that objectification, proliferations of mind that tend to hinder us, block us, create obstacles for ourselves. So it's important to recognize what we're doing, how we're doing it. And of course, then that's where the sense of these other qualities are important to nurture and to care for. Those qualities of humility and modesty, of simplicity, a simplicity of a being that it's easy to take delight in goodness. Contentment that is easily, you see, being easily satisfied. Contentment both in terms of with physical things, or just like with the contentment with oneself, so that one is there's an internal contentment that doesn't need a lot of stimulation, external props, that there's a there's that, because solitude is not necessarily just being by oneself, but a sense of a seclusion, an internal seclusion. That's based on well-being and contentment. So that one cultivating that, directing attention toward that. And directing attention to the ways of applying effort and energy. And not just to keep busy, but where one's actually putting forth an effort, a wholesome effort, effort that is based on the increasing of wholesome Dhamma, a brightening of the mind. Because when we effort from the Buddha's perspective is the effort that is increasing that which is wholesome and skillful, and is decreasing the things that are obstructive and unwholesome. So that putting forth of effort and a diligence is not neither out of sort of fear or anxiety, or not neither out of just trying to keep oneself busy, but there's a contentment that arises when one engages the mind, engages one's effort in extending oneself, being willing to test oneself, to be trying out what are ways that I can become more skillful. How can I be more restrained or more peaceful? What are the ways that I can engage the mind and my effort that allows me to understand things more clearly? Now, these are there's a satisfaction that comes in challenging oneself. It's easy to become complacent. It's easy to or to just try to take the easy way out sometimes, just try to be get maximum results for with minimum effort. That's a wonderful habit that we all have. And but that sense of not holding back, but just being willing to give oneself to practice, giving oneself to training oneself, giving oneself to really cultivating peace and understanding, and giving oneself to that. And of course, that takes some effort. Learning the skills of settling the mind, really allowing the heart to become very clear and bright. These are all the tools that we need to be relying on in our practice. But I think the Buddha rightly picks up on that last quality of nipapancha, that non-proliferation, that non-objectification. Because that tendency to either say solidify, because that's where that sense of objectification is kind of like solidifying the sense of me here in the world outside, kind of a subject-object dualism that keeps us separated and bifurcated. And of course that keeps the mind spinning. And so that non-proliferation and sort of not buying into the stories that the mind keeps telling, and not buying into the proliferations of the mind throws out, so that it can get out of really relinquishing and putting things down. Putting down the story, putting down the objects of attention, and settling in that inner stillness, inner clarity. And you see what happens when we, especially as the mind starts to become peaceful, starts to settle, and of course we're trying to do that. We want to be peaceful, but then this stuff, things get thrown up into consciousness, and we run after it. We end up like some like a Labrador dog, but you throw a stick as many times as you want, and it just keeps running after it. they're just completely tireless. To be able to break that fascination and that. In that sense of proliferation, willingness to run after the objects of attention. So that in our practice, that a lot of that comes back to just that willingness to to set things down. And it does come back to the quality of contentment. So that these qualities are, I mean, they're linked together, they work together. It's not a just a linear progression, but they work together. So learning how to create that web of wholesome inner qualities that allows the mind to really settle, to really relinquish, to really be content. That in our practice, recognizing those habits that tend toward hindrances, and recognize the opportunity that we have of giving ourselves to those qualities that are really beneficial. So of course, that's the function of discernment. That's the function of wisdom. That wisdom actually sees what is beneficial and what's not beneficial. What's for one's long-term growth and well-being, and what's to one's detriment, and to sharpen that sword of wisdom, sharpen that tool of discernment, so that we're able to support and encourage, rely on ourselves. So that as we continue to practice during the retreat, I mean, there's already been a lot of teachings given. There'll be a lot more given, but it's not just one particular teaching or one particular tool that we rely on, but learning how to see how these different qualities work together, put forth our effort and patience towards it. To offer that for reflection this evening.